Okay, let's unpack this. Risk. It's a word we throw around a lot, right? But at its heart, as our sources highlight, it's really about the future being unpredictable in ways that could lead to loss, especially, when we're talking about anything with monetary value.
Yeah, exactly. Think about it. Your car, your business, even your potential income. I mean, everything faces these dangers where the outcomes just aren't certain.
And what's really remarkable is how this uncertainty about potential losses, it touches almost everything we do, how we live and operate.
Absolutely. And that's precisely where insurance, well, steps into the frame. Our mission today is to explore how societies, really throughout history, have built this fascinating mechanism to shield themselves from these risks.
We're really drilling down into the core principles, aren't we? The ones forged and refined over centuries.
That's the plan.
Okay, so think about the sheer variety of risks out there. A sudden injury, damage to your property, theft, an unexpected
The
illness.
list goes on.
Yeah, and insurance is designed to, well, soften that blow, right? To ease the anxiety that comes with facing these unknowns. But the systems we have now, they didn't just appear overnight, did they?
No, not at all. Our sources point back to really early, almost intuitive forms of protection. Things like tribal mutual aid.
Ah, like if someone's house burned down, the whole community pitched in.
Exactly. If someone's dwelling was destroyed, the community would rally to rebuild it. This collective effort, sharing the burden, it was a foundational step.
Makes sense.
But, as societies got more complex and the kinds of risks changed, these informal systems, they naturally hit limitations. It wasn't always sustainable or even fair when certain people consistently faced higher risks.
Yeah, I can see that. You can't really rely on a small group to keep supporting someone facing, like, a recurring big threat.
Right. So the need for something more formal, more equitable, it emerged. That planted the first seeds for what became insurance.
And it seems like this evolution was tied pretty closely to trade and manufacturing growing, wasn't it?
Oh, definitely. Indisputably. The sources highlight the Phoenicians, those ancient maritime traders from, what, around 3,000 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, pioneers in marine insurance. I mean, just imagine the risks of shipping goods across vast oceans back then.
It's incredible they were thinking that way so early on.
It really shows this basic understanding, even then, that individuals couldn't handle everything alone, especially for international trade. Then you fast forward to the Industrial Revolution, big events like the Great Fire of London.
Right, suddenly you have all this concentrated wealth in factories and cities.
Exactly. And the need for fire insurance became starkly obvious.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting for me. These basic ideas, they weren't just thought up in isolation.
No, not at all.
They've been shaped, refined over millennia through just doing it, practical experience, the way laws developed English law. EC directives played a big role, apparently.
They absolutely did. They provided crucial structures for regulating insurance, ensuring fairness, setting precedents for contracts and claims.
And it's still adapting, right, to globalization, the internet, new tech. It's like a living, breathing thing.
Precisely. The world's always changing, isn't it? And how we face risk has to change too. New tech, global connections, they bring new kinds of risk. So insurance mechanics have to keep adjusting.
So the core mission of this deep dive then is to really get the essential character, the purpose of insurance, and why it's become such a cornerstone of modern life.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Agreed. Okay, let's get down to brass tacks then. How does this whole insurance thing actually work? Let's use that fire insurance example again just to paint a clear picture.
Okay, so at its heart, it works on collective contribution. Lots of people or businesses facing a similar risk fire, in this case, they each pay in a relatively small amount. That's the premium.
Right, into a shared pot.
Exactly,
Yeah.
shared pool of funds.
Yeah.
Then, if one of those contributors unfortunately has a fire and it's a covered loss, this big fund is used to pay them back to compensate them.
So the risk is spread out. The big financial hit doesn't fall on just one person.
Precisely. It's distributed across the whole group.
And this isn't just guesswork, is it? There's math behind it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Solid math. This is where the law of average, or as it's often called, the law of large numbers, comes in. Basically, the more data you have, the bigger the group you look at, the better you can predict how often losses will happen and how severe they'll be on average within that group.
So insurers use statistics.
Heavily. They rely on these statistical predictions to figure out the premiums. They need enough to cover the claims they expect, plus their running costs, and, well, keep the whole thing sustainable.
And computers must be crucial for that now, with all the data.
Oh, indispensable for handling and analyzing these huge data sets. It's quite amazing, really, how this math turns unpredictable individual risks into predictable group losses.
So the basic steps are pretty logical then. Find a big group with the same risk, collect their premiums to build a fund, and then pay out from that fund when someone has a covered misfortune, a claim.
That's the core loop. And modern insurance goes a bit further, too. It's not just about sharing the immediate cost. They also spread the risk over time.
How does that work?
Well, in years when there aren't as many claims as expected, insurers build up reserves, extra money.
Like a rainy day fund.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That acts as a financial cushion. So in years when claims are unexpectedly high or really costly, they can dip into those reserves to absorb the shock.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, we've been using the word risk a lot, but our sources make an important distinction between risk and uncertainty. What's the key difference there?
Yeah, that's a really critical distinction. In insurance terms, risk is about situations where you can identify the possible future outcomes. Think like rolling dice, you know, the possibilities. And you have some idea, some probability of each outcome happening.
Okay, so it's somewhat quantifiable.
Right. Uncertainty, on the other hand, that's where you either can't see all the possible outcomes, or you just have no way to judge their chances. Like launching a totally new product, something untested. Mm. Its success is more in the realm of uncertainty.
Got it. So risk is more about known possibilities, even if the outcome is unknown. Makes sense why insurance needs that predictability. And then there are different types of risk, right? Fundamental versus particular, pure versus speculative. Let's break those down.
Yes, good categories to understand. So fundamental risks are the big ones. They affect large groups, maybe whole regions. Think natural disasters like hurricanes or major economic downturns, recessions.
Things generally outside any one person's control.
Exactly. And often they need societal responses. Maybe government help.
Okay, and particular risks.
Those are more localized, more individual, like the risk of a car crash or damage to your own house. Here, what an individual does, the precautions they take, can often influence the chance or the severity of something happening.
And these are often the ones you can insure.
Frequently, yes. Then we have pure risks. With pure risk, the only possible outcomes are either a loss or nothing changes.
Like a fire, theft, an accident. No upside potential from the event itself.
Precisely. No chance of gain. These are the classic insurable risks.
Which brings us to speculative risks.
All right. Speculative risks have the possibility of both loss and gain, like starting a business or, you know, playing the stock market.
You could make money or you could lose it.
Exactly. And generally, these are not considered insurable. Insurance is there to protect against the downside, the potential financial harm, not to guarantee success in speculative ventures.
So buying insurance is essentially handing off the financial worry of those pure risks to the insurer.
That's a good way to put it. You're transferring the financial burden.
It's like trading that potential for a huge unexpected bill for a smaller, predictable payment, the premium. The sources use the house fire example again here. Without insurance, it's ruin. With insurance,
the insurer helps you rebuild, recover. It provides that financial certainty when things go wrong.
That captures it perfectly. Financial certainty against adversity. But insurance can also indirectly affect the level of risk itself, can't it?
It can, yes, in a couple of interesting ways.
On one hand, insurers often push for safety, right? Offer discounts for security systems, safe driving records, things that actually lower the chance of a loss happening.
That's right. They might give businesses advice on fire safety or offer those no-claim bonuses to drivers as an incentive to be careful.
But then there's the flip side, the moral hazard idea. Can you explain that?
Yes, moral hazard. It's that slightly tricky situation where because you have insurance, you might perhaps unintentionally be a bit less careful. Or in really rare extreme cases, someone might even deliberately cause a loss because they know they'll get paid.
Sort of a don't worry, it's insured attitude creeping in.
Yeah, that's the potential danger. It can subtly change behavior.
And insurers have to guard against that.
Oh, absolutely. They're very aware of it. A common tool is the excess or deductible.
Where you pay the first part of any claim yourself.
Exactly. It means you still have some skin in the game, some financial responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
That helps keep people careful, maintains accountability.
Okay. So the main job of insurance, compensate the insured when a covered loss happens. And the key principle is often indemnity, right? Putting you back in the same financial spot you were in before the loss.
Precisely. Whether that's by paying money, replacing what was damaged, covering repairs, restoring you financially.
But as the sources note, that doesn't quite fit for things like life insurance or personal accident cover.
Correct. Strict indemnity doesn't really apply there. You can't truly put a price on a life or replace a lost limb financially in the same way you replace a TV.
So what's the goal then?
In those cases, it's more about providing financial support to ease the hardship that results from the event, offering relief when something invaluable is lost or changed.
Makes sense. And a really key point we touched on. Insurance shouldn't let you profit from a loss.
Absolutely fundamental. The indemnity principle is designed specifically to stop that. Which leads us to another important distinction. The difference between insurance and just, well, betting. A wager.
They might seem similar on the surface, money and certainty.
Right, but the legal and ethical bases are totally different.
For one thing, insurance contracts are legally binding, enforceable agreements. Most bets aren't. Legally speaking.
That's a huge difference in their legal standing. What happens if someone doesn't pay up? Then there's insurable interest. Crucial concept.
Meaning you have to actually stand to lose financially if the insured thing is damaged or lost?
Exactly. You need a real financial stake. You can't just insure your neighbor's house hoping it burns down. That requirement doesn't exist for a simple bet.
And what about utmost good faith?
Ah, yes. Ubi erme fide. In insurance, both sides, you and the insurer, have a legal duty to be completely honest, to disclose all the relevant facts that might affect the risk.
You have to tell them everything important.
Pretty much. That level of required honesty isn't usually there when you're, say, betting on a horse race.
Okay. Transparency is key for insurance.
Paramount. And like we said, insurance aims for indemnity, making good a loss, no profit. Wagers are all about the potential profit, the win.
And finally, insurance usually covers things that might happen, they're uncertain. Bets are often on things that will happen, but the outcome is unknown, like who wins a match.
Good distinction. So yeah, while they both involve money and uncertainty, the principles, the legal rules, the whole purpose in society, very, very different.
Okay. Now, it's clear you can't insure absolutely everything, right? Some risks are just uninsurable. What makes a risk fall into that category?
Well, first off, anything without a clear monetary value. Like you mentioned earlier, treasured photos, things with purely sentimental value. The loss is real, painful even, but you can't really put a price tag on it for a claim.
Can't quantify it financially.
Exactly. Then there are risks that are just too rare, too unusual. Remember the law of large numbers.
Need enough data to predict losses.
Right. If something hardly ever happens across a large group, insurers just don't have the stats to figure out a fair premium. It's too unpredictable.
And what if there's just not enough information generally, like losses from fashion trends changing or some brand new technology messing things up?
Precisely. If historical data gives you no clue about the future likelihood or cost, it's incredibly hard to insure. The past isn't a guide.
Okay. What else?
Well, insurance generally doesn't cover losses that are expected or deliberate. Like, if someone already has an incurable illness, they usually can't then buy a new life policy covering death from that illness. The event needs to be accidental, unexpected.
Not a certainty. And then there are the huge catastrophic risks.
Yes, the really big ones that affect huge areas, lots of people at once. Think widespread war, massive earthquakes, volcanic eruptions.
Things that could generate just overwhelming claims.
Exactly. The scale of potential losses could be so immense, so correlated, it could actually threaten the financial stability of the insurers themselves, even the big ones.
Too big to handle through normal insurance pools.
Potentially, yes. And sometimes, insuring something might actually be bad for the public, create the wrong incentives. Like insuring against speeding tickets. That might just encourage people to drive faster.
Yeah, okay. The sources gave us a kind of checklist too, didn't they? The tests of insurability?
They did. It's a useful guide. Things like, is the event uncertain? Is the outcome an unwanted loss? Is it accidental? Can the loss be measured financially? Does the person insuring it have a real financial connection?
Are there enough similar risks out there to predict losses? And is insuring it legal and, you know, okay from a public policy standpoint?
Exactly. It's a good framework. Though it's worth remembering, the market evolves. What's insurable can change over time.
Right. But even if a risk is technically insurable by those tests, not everyone buys the insurance, do they? Why do some insurable risks go uninsured?
Well, sometimes people just aren't aware of the risk. They might not realize they could be liable if, say, a customer slips and falls in their shop.
Ignorance isn't bliss there.
Definitely not. Or the potential loss might seem really small, so the cost of the insurance premium feels like it outweighs the benefit. Why insure something cheap against a rare event?
Makes sense for low-value things.
Then you have people who, well, actually enjoy risk. People who do dangerous sports or activities. They might consciously decide not to insure against the potential bad outcomes.
They accept the risk.
They do. And of course, a huge factor is just cost. Affordability.
Right.
People and businesses have to balance how much they dislike risk against what they can actually afford to pay in premiums.
So they might take their chances if the insurance feels too expensive.
Right. And sadly, sometimes it just boils down to misjudging the risk. That feeling of, it won't happen to me. Mm-hmm. Or just not understanding the real value insurance provides until it's too late.
That underestimation can lead to real hardship down the line.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. But insurance isn't just about paying for losses, is it? There are those other benefits, the subsidiary benefits. We should touch on those quickly.
Yeah, definitely. One of the biggest is just peace of mind. Knowing you've got that safety net, it reduces worry about the future, doesn't it? Life insurance is a prime example.
Huge psychological benefit. It also gives people and businesses confidence, makes them more willing to try new things, start ventures, innovate, knowing they have some protection if things go wrong.
And it frees up capital too, right? Instead of hoarding cash just in case, businesses can invest it.
Exactly. Funds that would otherwise be tied up in reserves can be put to productive use, helping growth.
It can even help people save, like with endowment policies. And all those premiums collected by insurers, they hold huge reserves. That money gets invested back into the economy, doesn't it?
Massively. Insurance companies are major investors, contributing a lot to economic development.
And let's not forget how it helps society overall. By covering things like car accident injuries or health costs, private insurance can take some pressure off public services and social welfare systems.
Very true. It plays a significant role there.
Now, all of this whole insurance world, it operates within a pretty strict legal framework. Let's use that example again. Mr. and Mrs. Wise insuring their house, to look at the legal side briefly.
Good idea. So when they talk to an insurance broker, they formed a legal relationship that's governed by agency law.
Okay.
And when they finally agreed on the policy with the insurer, they created a legally binding contract. That falls under normal contract law, but with extra special rules just for insurance.
Specific insurance laws on top of general contract law.
Exactly. And if, say, they had a claim, the insurer would look at the doctrine of proximate cause. Was the loss directly caused by something the policy actually covers?
So was the insured event the real cause?
Essentially, yes.
Mm.
And the whole thing operates within laws designed to make sure business is fair, transparent, ethical.
Right. So a contract, basically, is just a legally enforceable agreement. If one side doesn't do what they promised, the other side can take legal action.
That's the essence of it. Seek remedies for the breach.
And for a simple contract to be valid, there are essential ingredients, like both sides have to intend it to be legally binding. There has to be a clear offer and a clear acceptance. And crucially, consideration, something of value exchange.
Right. In insurance, the consideration from the insured, from Mr. and Mrs. Wise, is the premium they pay.
And from the insurer.
It's their promise, their undertaking to pay if a valid claim occurs to provide that coverage.
Plus, the contract has to be for a legal purpose, and everyone involved has to be legally capable, like being old enough, mentally sound.
All essential elements for a valid contract. And while some simple contracts might be verbal, insurance contracts are almost always written down. That's the policy document.
But the piece of paper isn't the contract itself.
Not exactly. It's the primary evidence of the contract. The policy is the formal written document that lays out all the details, the terms, the conditions of the agreement they reached.
Got it. The written record of the deal.
Precisely.
Okay. So, as we wrap up this deep dive, we've covered a lot of ground on risk and insurance. We've seen how it grew from simple mutual aid to the complex systems we have now.
Mm-hmm. Quite an evolution.
We've looked at the core ideas, pooling risk, the law of large numbers. We've sorted out different types of risk, how insurance mainly deals with transferring pure risks.
And we touched on those vital legal foundations that give it all structure and enforceability.
Yeah, it seems really clear that in a world full of uncertainties, understanding insurance, its principles, its purpose is pretty much essential for everyone, really. Individuals, businesses, society.
Couldn't agree more. It's indispensable knowledge in today's world.
So here's a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over. Thinking about the new kinds of risks we're facing, big, complex things like cybersecurity threats, climate change impacts, maybe even future pandemics. How do you think the basic ideas and practices of insurance might need to change to evolve even further? It really makes you think about that balance, doesn't it? Between what individuals are responsible for managing and what society needs to handle collectively, especially as these risks keep changing.
It certainly raises some profound questions for the future of risk management. And if we sparked your interest, we definitely encourage you to look deeper, maybe into specific types of insurance relevant to you, or dig into some of those legal aspects we just skimmed.
Yeah, there's always more to learn. It's a huge and constantly changing field.